You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey, everybody. We are back with, we'll call it part two instead of an after show because it's definitely going to be extended. We had a great conversation in part one. Eric Gall, he is back. We are going to keep chatting. In case you missed it, the first part, he's the founder and broker of Edison Business Advisors. Eric, are you ready for, let's just say, round two?
Yeah, let's go for it. I'm ready.
All right. And how did you feel that round one went? I would say episode one, I'd say part one, but it felt, you know, it feels like two big things. How was that on your side?
I thought you had some great questions and, you know, it created a pretty good conversation. I know if, you know, thinking back to when I was, you know, a business owner looking to sell a business or, you know, an aspiring buyer, I think there's a lot of stuff there that, you know, I'd have loved to known at the time.
Yeah. And we talked about it in the first part where the, you know, I think the biggest challenge that your industry has as a whole is awareness and education, right? So business owners mm-hmm. not knowing you exist or not knowing how to select ones. We talked about that with your guide on how to select a business broker and who's the right one for you. And I think just fundamentally it's tough because there's just not enough, which is obviously why we do this and why I think it's valuable. And of course, you know, an unofficial mark for me is that if we can jump in and do 45 minutes to an hour and not even get to the second part of the main episode, it's obviously some good stuff. I'm just going to be biased and say like there was a lot of good things in there that people should definitely go back and check out. And let's jump off where we would normally be in the second section of the first episode. And let's talk about the marketing growth tips. So these are the strategies and the things that you have found over the years of doing what you do with your firm, now with other brokers that you hire and train, mentor, and bring on board. And so what do you have on your list? Let's start with the first one that you'd have on a list of things that you know is a good, it's a good strategy for growth for business brokers.
Well, you know, definitely a warm lead is much better than, you know, a cold lead, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, you can send out letters and you can make cold calls all day long. But if you've been recommended by someone, you know, that carries that knows that business owner or that business buyer, that carries a heck of a lot more weight. So, you know, I've kind of transitioned and my focus is really marketing to the centers of influence is what I call them. And those are accountants, yep. attorneys, bankers, financial planners, wealth managers. Those types of people, you know, have, you know, people with money who are looking to buy. And they are also representing a lot of business owners who have accumulated wealth through their business over time, you know, who at, you know, some point in time, you know, in their business ownership life cycle, it, you know, everyone has to sell eventually.
Everyone has to exit the business, like they Absolutely. Say, horizontally or vertically, like, but you're exiting the business.
So that's worked real well for me, you know, developing those agreements, you know, those kind of relationships, I should say, with accountants and the like have really boosted my career, especially over the last 10 years.
That's great. You've been doing it for a long time. You have the relationships. I wouldn't say it's easier to do it when you've been in the business for a long time, but it definitely helps if you're intentional, which I know that you are. There's some people out there who have been in business for a long time and aren't intentional on relationships and referrals, and they still have nothing in that bucket. But let's talk about this. You weren't expecting this, but this popped in my head. I'm thinking about you with the new brokers that you bring on board. And so for new brokers listening to this or you know, managing brokers who are thinking about bringing other people on, how can they approach this, right? So I'm thinking they don't have the experience to say, I know what to do with your clients and I'll help make sure the best thing happens to them. And then B, they might not have the network. So what's a good starting point or what do you suggest to your brokers when they come on board?
Well, I mean, this is such a relationship and people business, right? Because I always look at it as, You know, when you're making a decision to sell a business, and you're going to put, you know, that big of a chip on the table, you want to work with someone that's knowledgeable and experienced. So a lot of times, you know, when you're just starting out and you don't have that knowledge and experience, you know, you're leaning on your broker. So I'd say something that's very important is to, you know, align yourself with someone that is experienced, you know, is knowledgeable and can at least guide you, you know, through the process multiple times. You know, I always recommend, you know, a few smaller deals to get started so you can build your name, build your credibility, you know, be exposed to certain things that pop up in deals. You know, there's a first time for everything. I mean, there's stuff that's new to me, you know, on deals, you know, that I experience, you know, still today. And I've been doing this, 17, 18 years, you know, in Florida here. So, you know, for younger people just getting in, I'm going to tell you the best thing you can do is get out there and meet other people, talk about what you do. Don't necessarily pose yourself as the best or the expert, but aligning yourself with someone who, you know, you're confident that you can sell yourself along with. So I think that's, you know, a critical element. I align myself with, you know, I mentioned yesterday, Bert Risden out of Orlando area. And Bert was one of the grandfathers of, you know, now become a grandfather of the business brokerage industry in Florida. So he had a name and a reputation around the state. And when I had a question that, you know, I couldn't answer myself, you know, I could lean on Bert, you know, for advice and help. And I think that's very important for someone just starting out in any business, really.
Yeah. So. And I think, you know, the aspirational goal is a big network, lots of referrals, deals just coming in and being busy with that instead of having to go get them. But I like what you said about focusing on meeting people, networking, getting your name out there, and just getting some experience with the smaller deals. Like, everyone wants to hit the home run, the game winning grand slam, but like, you gotta start somewhere and just at least make contact with the ball, as they say, when you're starting out in baseball. Yes. And you know, where I think it's tough because, you know, business brokerage attracts people who are looking at the commission, and it's like, this is great. Like, I just, yeah, of course I want to close $4 million deals. It's like, yeah, let's work.
Yeah. And I'll talk to my young guys, your young, you know, guys and gals when they come on board and they're like, well, I want to do what you do. I, you know, I just saw you do this, you know, $7 million deal. How, you know, yeah. I want to do one of those. And I'm like, look, you know, that guy who sold his business for $7 million, you know, probably spoke to about 5 or 6 business brokers. You know, if they spoke to you and 6 others, I guarantee you at least 3 or 4 of the others that they spoke to have done a deal similar to his, and they can tell them about that. Yeah. You have not done any deals. So why would they pick you? So, you know, competing, you know where you're capable of competing, you know, as well, you know, focus on getting that done. I mean, I know a lot of business brokers in my shoes today that I started with. And, you know, we did the deals that, you know, resulted in a $10,000-$20,000 commission.
Right.
We didn't feel bad about it. We just went out and we did them. And if you do 5 of those, it's $100,000. If you do none of, you know, if you try for the big fish all the time and you do none of those, you don't make any money and you're out of the business quickly.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I always look at it, never turn down a trip to the bank.
I love it.
Right? When you're starting out, never turn down that trip to the bank. When you're established, you can be a little bit pickier and choosier.
Yeah. And I think that's tough, right? Because, you know, I think that happens everywhere in life. I can think of like music, sports, like, oh, I want to do that. And I want to do X, Y, and Z. It's like, great. Put in your 10,000 hours, right? That's cool. Like, you want to do the $7 million deal as a business broker. Great. Put in the 10,000 hours. I'll see you in 7 to 10 years, right? Like, when you've been punched in the face enough, you've learned how to adapt. You've got the scars, like all the stuff we talked about in the first conversation. So, but I think it's great. I think, you know, starting out with whatever deals you can get, not being too good for the main street deals, and work your way up if that's what you want to do. Some brokers I know, they've been around for a while, they love the main street deals. They just crank out you know, base hits after base hits, and it still works.
And as you grow, and you know, you get yourself in front of those sellers that, you know, own those, you know, $5-10 million businesses, and there are far fewer of them. You know, as you get in front of them, you know, when they ask you, "Hey, what have you done?" I mean, you say, "Well, I've done, you know, 2 deals." You know, why would they use you? But if you can say, "Look, I've done, you know, 25 deals in the last, you know, 2 years," they're not asking you, "Well, what size were those?"
Yeah.
They're dumb. Like, "Oh, this guy can get a deal done."
That's it. Right? Yeah.
If you're just sitting there hunting elephants, you know, you may or may not see.
I see that a lot in other sales roles, right? You know, a lot of times it's referred to as whale hunting. And I've had, you know, companies I've talked to before, and they're like, "We want to do that." I said, "Here's the problem with whale hunting is it either works really well or the whole village starves and dies, right? Like it's you either find the whale or you spend a lot of effort doing it and then it's not good.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention with all my agents is I really, really encourage education. So in the state of Florida, lucky, we have a very strong state association, the Business Brokers of Florida. Business Brokers of Florida 2 years ago negotiated, 2 or 3 years ago, we negotiated a agreement with the IBBA, International Business Brokers Association, to have a discounted membership along with them. And IBBA is probably the preeminent educational force in business brokerage. They've long established, you know, a series of courses, not just for the experienced broker, but for the person just entering the field. And they also have certifications that they offer, you know, based on education and getting deals done. And I make it a point, you know, it's in my agreement with everyone that works for me that they're going to go and get those certifications, which means they're going to go get and take that education, you know, to help establish themselves so they can talk intelligently and about the business.
And I think that's super important. I think, again, going back to the awareness and education challenge that your industry has and that you have with business owners is like, they don't necessarily know what they should be looking for, which is, again, why I like your guide, just plugging that on my side. It's not a paid product placement by you. I'm just saying, because I think that's what's really needed out there, is because the acronyms and the, you know, the acronym salad that comes after someone's name as a business broker means nothing to most people, because who knows what all those things are, right? Like, versus, you know, certifications, acronyms, like degrees, things like that in other industries where it's just become common knowledge. In this case here, they have no idea. And so I think it's great, A, that you have your team do that. I think it's important. And I love the fact that the IBBA has that as tracks for people to get the education. And then I think it's important for business owners, if you're listening to this, is to just research what those are, like go to the IBBA site, look at what's available, look at what they mean, and then do your filtering of like, well, for what I'm looking for, I want someone who understands this or this and has this, you know, kind of training.
Yeah, I can give you a 20-second plug on each one of those that I think are important. When you're doing street deals, when you're doing Main Street deals, I would look for someone who's got a CBI. That's a Certified Business Intermediary designation from the IBBA. It means that they've taken sufficient educational courses, and they've demonstrated that they can complete. If you're a larger business, when we start talking about that 5-7 million and up dollar, you know, enterprise value business, the IBBA has a sister organization called M&A Source. M&A Source offers what's called the MAMI, Merger and Acquisition Master Intermediary Certification, which again, you've completed a certain set of education requirements, and then you've completed X number of deals over a certain size to qualify for lower middle market deals. Now, there's another association out there in M&A that offers a similar type designation. It's called AAMI, I think, or something to that effect.
Okay.
It's basically equivalent. So I would look for brokers that have those certifications because you're going to be confident that they've spent the time to, you know, understand from other experts, you know, the nuances of the craft. They've cared enough, you know, to learn and they care enough to maintain it through ongoing education and accomplishing deals over time.
Got it. I love it. So that's the education piece. That's number two on your list. What else for brokers on the growth/marketing/success?
You know, I mentioned mentors earlier. You know, I said I started with Bert Rieson out of Orlando, you know, which was a good mentor, just especially on the Main Street stuff. Coming out of Ford Motor Company, I didn't really have much experience with Main Street, but it allowed me to get exposed to it. So again, having a good broker or someone you can lean on, you know, to coach you along the way and to that's been through a lot of different scenarios or situations that can give you advice is critical. I'd also say one of the things that I've done is, you know, I was very fortunate to meet a gentleman by the name, Will, I'm trying to think of his last name. But a long time ago, but he's the head of ABBA, which is like an educational association that he created. And Will created a best practices group, and he needed people to facilitate him. So I facilitated one of four best practices group. We're actually down to one right now nationwide that has about 22 brokers in it presently. And I've been involved in that since 2014. So we've been going strong 12 years.
Wow.
And we've been very careful on who we let in. So we're looking for, you know, top brokers in the United States and Canada. And those are the people that we seek to join us. And then when people retire out now, we replace them with someone who's, you know, won a lot of awards, you know, got all the certifications, because we're not just trying to, you know, do business brokerage at the average level. We're trying to do it at the highest level. So, you know, the most accomplished people are who you're going to learn from.
Yeah.
So, you know, depending on the level that you're at, you know, if you're just getting into the business, you know, I know Ron West, you know, has, you know, kind of entry level groups that he's created. We've got a gentleman over on the East Coast of Florida, John Booker, who's created like a WhatsApp group that, you know, shares information and asks questions with one another to one another. So there's a lot of opportunities out there for people, you know, getting started or even very accomplished brokers to join best practices groups.
I love it. That's great. And I think it's, you know, like they say, success leaves clues. And, you know, there's the competence quadrant we won't get into here because we'll take all the time. And I have so much more we want to talk about. But, you know, there's what you don't know that you don't know. And there's what you do know that you don't know. And the best thing about the mentors and best practice groups and masterminds and those kind of things, it's usually in the category of helping you understand the things that you didn't know that you didn't even know. So at least you can realize you didn't know it. Then you can start working on it and get better at it.
You know, and it's impossible to know everything or be an expert in everything. And, you know, things come up on, you know, a weekly basis that it's like, oh, this is the first time I've ever heard of something like that, you know, even being at it as long as I have. So, you know, there's times when, you know, oh, okay. You know, that's that working capital question needs to be answered by someone who's, you know, very, you know, has lived a life working on working capital. Right. And not just business deals. So, you know, there's folks like Imani Walker out of Texas, who's very, very good at working capital, that, you know, comes and speaks at the IBBA, and you get to meet people like that and you can, you know, leverage their knowledge base.
So, yeah. Subject matter experts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. That's great. I love it. Anything else on the growth tips? These are great so far.
Well, I mean, we talked a little bit about marketing documents yesterday and, you know, going the extra mile and making sure that, you know, they're highly detailed, you know, because it becomes a huge time saver. I think we talked about doing, you know, a seller video or seller interview video, which again, you know, is a huge time saver. down the road when you start getting into buyer seller meetings. So I would say quality your marketing documents, take the extra time to make sure that they're well written, they're understandable, know your audience. Not everybody knows the acronyms. Not everybody knows speaks, our financial language. And so you just got to be able to, I always say, you create your second personality, which is, a less educated buyer, a less educated seller, think in their shoes and, write accordingly, talk accordingly, and it will help you a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. And, it's one of those things, it's an evolution and it's all about progress, not perfection, but just improving the marketing documents, marketing related things. And that helps obviously with the client that you have now and helping them be successful with their exit, but also getting new clients because you can show them the examples, you can explain the process, and people like processes and systems and want to know that you know what you're doing and you have a roadmap to get there and you're not just winging it.
Yeah. And I'm an engineer. I have an MBA as well, but, I started life as a process engineer. So, I am highly focused on process, and procedures and making sure that, they're followed. And, sometimes I don't even follow them, but I do my best, but, sometimes you do have to deviate and, you learn from those deviations and you improve your processes and tweak things, through time. But, I have a great appreciation for process. That's for sure.
it's so important. And there's people out there who really dislike processes and systems and that kind of thing, because it feels very restrictive. But what I've learned from others and even myself is that the more processes you have in place, it actually makes things easier because those things are getting done a certain way. And then it actually frees you up to do other things, right? Because there's a structure for this. So now you can handle that. And in your business, the other thing that's outside of the process is everything to do with humans, and humans are messy and unpredictable. And so the more you can systemize what you can and control what you can, leave space for the rest.
And it's funny you bring that up, because the other thing that we had on the list to talk about was, CRM or resource management tool, in order to kind of lay out your process and integrate your process. And, we use one, it's called Deal Relations. It's owned by a firm out of, Canada, but Deal Relations it's been a godsend to me. Before I was using a CRM, I remember, I was going on vacation to see family in Michigan, and I launched a new listing, and it was a medical billing business. I launched that listing the day before I left. I spent the entire next 2 weeks on the phone, answering calls, talking to people, getting them information. I barely saw my family. I was working from sun up, past sundown, to keep up. And I was in the process of evaluating several CRMs, and I was doing it along with another broker, and made the mistake of letting him talk me into waiting and evaluating a couple more. And I can tell you this, the minute I got back, I cut the check for the CRM. And immediately was saving probably about 8 hours a week in my time in processing people's, the late nights I was enduring, just because I didn't have anything to facilitate the process were taxing. But ever since I got a CRM in place that kind of integrates my entire process, and I don't want to say Deal Relations does everything for you, you have to program it along the lines of your process over time, which, I've done a pretty good job. But now, I can literally say, okay, I've completed, a CBR, I've completed a confidential business review, or a confidential information memorandum. I've completed the advertisement language that'll go public on websites or our website. I've completed, advertisement graphics that, may go on, LinkedIn or Twitter or wherever I want to put them. And I want the buyer's approval. It's literally a push of the button. And, I get an electronic signature from them that says they've approved everything. So there's a record of the approval. When a buyer inquires, on a business, it immediately sends them out a link to an electronic NDA, which, they can fill out, sign, and return. I can manage all the documentation, whether it's documentation that's, the SIM, CBR, or financial statements, all that can be managed, specifically through just push of a button, an approval button for a specific buyer. When you get to due diligence, it has a data room where you can upload all the documents in the data room, know who looked at them, who hasn't. Track whether the entire due diligence list is complete, where the holes are, what information needs to be gone after. So it's really, really changed, my process, and made it a whole lot easier. So I would always recommend that, someone, if you aren't using a CRM in this business today, you're probably going to end up killing yourself.
Yeah, it's so true, right? Unless you're doing one deal at a time. If you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now back to the episode.
You're probably going to end up killing yourself.
Yeah, it's so true, right? Unless you're doing one deal at a time. Right. Other than that group of people who just are doing low volume of deals, right, either intentionally or unintentionally, then beyond that, there's no reason to just do things the hard way with the technology that's available. It's just that it doesn't make any sense to me, especially with the technology that's out there. Like you said, there's some programming required, but it's still none of this is impossible. Right. It's not that hard.
But you mentioned the human element, and I want to go back to the human element.
Yeah,
because it's actually something that came up in a team meeting on Tuesday, and that was I got asked by one of the younger agents if we could create a breakup letter, an automated breakup letter with a buyer. Basically, a buyer that may not have enough money or may not have the right qualifications to buy the business. And I gave it about 10 seconds thought, and I said, absolutely not. It would be totally disrespectful of that buyer to, send them some type of form letter saying, sorry, you're not qualified to purchase this business. Good luck in your search. I think that would be horrible. So I said, you need to take a look at every individual and evaluate them and tell them where they're missing. What qualifications are missing. If it's money, you need to answer them respectfully. You need to say, hey, this business requires $150,000 down payment. The working capital requirement is about another $150,000 as well. The bank's going to require that you have, 3 months or 6 months living expenses, in liquidity. So we're looking at, you need close to $400,000 in liquid capital to do this deal. I don't see it on your financial statement. Let me know if I'm missing something.
Yeah.
That's respectful. And I can't tell you the amount of times I've sent that that email back and they've come back and said, oh, well, you know, I'm going in on this deal with my brother. My brother's got, $800,000 liquid. Here's his financial statement.
And then there it is.
You know, it changes my mood on the deal and working with him. And, you know, but to do something like a simple breakup letter, I mean, the human element is so important. Everybody, you know, who wants to buy a business and acquire should be treated respectfully. Everybody who's looking to sell their business should be treated respectfully. But they also should be treated with the truth, right?
Yeah.
So the truth is, you know, in that case with that buyer, you know, here's what you need. You know, sometimes buyers will go, well, you know what? I can't come up with that kind of money. And you say, well, great. But, you know, I do see you have $150,000 down. I do see that you're looking for, you know, lawn and landscaping companies. Let me find you some that you can buy.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, like when I think about the human element, what comes to mind as you're talking about that is the tendency, especially for salespeople, so in this category, the business brokers, is get jaded or just assume things or just not take each person, you know, each buyer and or seller seriously, and just, you know, assume, oh, well, they don't qualify, so who cares? Like, it's a numbers game. So let me just keep playing the numbers instead of doing what's right in that response, which I love, which is, I'm not seeing it. Here's what's missing for you, for this to be valid or for you to be a strong buyer candidate. And you never know where that leads to, right? And that goes back to the relational networking, referrals, just general goodwill in this relational business that you're in.
Yeah, I talked about the landscaping broker yesterday in session one.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
The landscaping, you know, I got a inquiry from a woman and, you know, I sent her a note saying, hey, you know, I need someone who's an experienced landscape architect or designer. And, you know, she came back, you know, that day with an email saying, oh, that's my husband. Easily sent her a breakup letter or dismissed her. But yeah. I said, I don't see it. I don't see it on your resume. You know, let me know if I'm missing something.
You know, yeah. And here's the challenge too, right? So the challenge is that if you just sent the cold breakup letter without asking a follow-up question, without caring about, you know, maybe like, what are you missing, right? Being curious more than just, you know, judging and curious, like, okay, why did you think this was okay in a good way without a passive aggressive tone? But like, why, what were you thinking? Help me connect the dots, right? The challenge is if you don't do that, if you just go with the cold breakup or just ignore it, like some companies do when you're like applying for jobs and they just ignore you and never reply. That can make the whole industry look bad because they probably are going to get that from several business brokers, right? A less than good experience as a potential buyer. And then they're going to, you know, result in the stories that I hear all the time where buyers just don't like business brokers, right? And it's like, don't blame them.
You know, that's 100% true. I hear it all the time. It's, you know, from the buy side. Yep. One of the benefits we have in Florida is we co-broke. So, you know, I can bring a buyer to someone else's deal. I mean, that's a huge advantage. And it's a huge reason for me to not dismiss buyers. So I don't, because I'll do probably 4 co-broke deals a year where I bring a buyer to someone else's listing. You know, it's a half a commission usually, you know, but it's a trip to the bank, right? Yeah. So if you're a good, solid, well-qualified financially, you know, buyer, you know, I'll work with you to try to find a business.
Yeah. That's great. All right. So all of that was great tips. I love those. Hopefully people tuning in wrote those down, took some notes, figure out how to apply those. Let's go, as you said in the first part, 180 degrees the other way, with a segment that I like that generally the guests, I don't know if it feels like therapy. It's kind of painful. We'll talk about your feelings, but this is the deal that got away. This is the lessons of the lost deal. I know that you have one set up, talked about it. You're like, yes, I've got one. And, you know, the biggest thing for people tuning in, this is the first time hearing the show and the first time hearing this segment, is there's always lessons that are learned in failure, even more than in success. And so failure, not necessarily on Eric's part, Eric didn't fail, do something wrong, but it's like, what part of this process broke or didn't go like it should have? Who did something they shouldn't have, such as a lesson, cautionary tale, again, for nobody, for others to learn from, so you don't do it yourself. So, all right, Eric, lay it on. I know you got one that just still burns.
Yeah, this one is always fun to talk about. I had it was an all in four dental implant center. Had the deal signed. It was for over $4 million. It was a single dentist who owned the center. And it was a institutional buyer. They had probably 30 clinics, I think, throughout the southeastern United States. And they were wonderful to work with, very thorough and due diligence, everything was going great. We had everything done but the lease. And the issue is they were like a two-tier dental service organization. They had a very high end, which was kind of like the all-in-four clinics or very, very sophisticated dental work, right? Then they had the low end, which was more pediatric type dentistry with, you know, a big tooth and a big toothbrush on their sign or something, kind of cartoonish, right, for the kids.
Yeah.
And the landlord, when we sent them the information and said, hey, here's the buyer, you know, they need a new lease. We need to transfer the existing lease and they'd like, you know, a couple extensions. Can you provide that for us? And he came back and he said, I've got a Class A building. Nobody's putting a cartoon tooth and toothbrush on my building. And we're like, well, no, that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is, you know, they're going to brand it under their high-end brand. And if you look at their website, they've got, you know, three locations. And here's some photos of those locations. You know, and one of them was like, I think in Texas, and the guy had, you know, $100,000 pieces of art on his walls, you know, as you walk through, and it was all this, you know, frosted glass and clear glass. I mean, it was the Taj Mahal of dental practices, right? So they could demonstrate that they had a very, very high-end brand. And they said, this is the type of image that we want, you know, for this clinic. And this is the type of image we want to bring to your business. And he said, well, I want you to come in and talk to me about it. And so they scheduled a meeting and they went in to talk to him about it. And they brought in a pitch book that they went through. And of course, they started their pitch book with, on the first page was a cartoon tooth and toothbrush, right? And it kind of set him off a little bit. And he said, oh, this is what I told you. I don't want to see this kind of stuff. You know,
yeah,
you're going to turn my building into, a circus tent, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, let us get to the other stuff. But, you know, they kind of turned his mind off again. So, you know, they didn't really know his audience. So they left the meeting, and we, the seller and I had a call with the landlord, and he's like, I think I get what they're doing. I'm okay in doing it. Let me draw up the lease. I'm going to send it over to my attorney. It's going to take about, you know, attorney's got some vacation time coming up and some other stuff. So it might take us about a month. And we're like, okay, well, we're supposed to close next week. Is there any way we can expedite? And they came back and said, no, there's no way I can expedite it. So the buyer came back and said, we're closing next week without the lease. And the seller said, well, how can you close next week without the lease? And they're like, we don't need a lease. We've got, you know, 45 attorneys on, you know, standby. You know, if we have to fight these guys,
oh, no. You know,
this landlord, we'll fight them. but we're closing without the lease. And he said, that landlord has been a good friend of mine. We've gone to dinner. We played cards together. We've done this for 25 years. We are not closing without a lease. And they're like, well, we got to close next week. It's critical we close next week. And he said, I'm not closing without a lease. So you better get back to the landlord, get a lease. And they went back, browbeat the landlord, and blew up the deal. And it didn't happen.
Wow.
Wow. And my seller got nervous on the statement. We got like 45 attorneys waiting. You know, he's like, well, what if something happens after the deal? Are they going to sue me? And not
pay? Yep.
Now, he was getting a very good chunk down, right? But, you know, if you got to go in and fight, you're paying an attorney to fight something. So that gave him pause too. So the chest thumping, and the browbeating the landlord killed the deal.
Oh, it's terrible.
That's so
avoidable,
right?
yeah, for sure, right? And where, you know, that kind of personality, the kind of person that's like, well, I have attorneys and I will get my way, and this is what we do, this is how I do things. Like, it's not a good fit all the time. Obviously, it works because they get to a certain point, but that's a terrible mismatch with what you're trying to accomplish. Wow. And it wasn't a small deal, of course. Usually doesn't happen in small deals.
Yeah, small deals, it'll happen. I mean, landlords are random. But another thing that happens a lot of times is advice from, you know, other folks. Right? Oh, you shouldn't sell at that price. The business is worth a whole lot more. You know. And that happens, you know, sometimes. So they pull out, obviously deals fall through in due diligence too, because you discover something that, you know, maybe a seller didn't tell you.
Sure.
You know, the broker. I try to, you know, I've had it happen. You know, we had one happen. It wasn't mine, but one of my guys, his deal, the guy put two trucks on his asset list, and the buyer followed one of the trucks, saw it on the road, followed the truck back to the compound, and there were four trucks parked there that were branded. And he's, you know, questioned, well, do you need four trucks to run this business, or is he keeping two trucks and is he going to compete against me? Valid questions. Didn't like the seller's answer. You know, I asked my guy, did you go and visit the site? And he's like, I did. And he only had two trucks there when I was there. And he never told me he had two more. So, you know, you get deals blowing up like that. So, you know, I pushed the sellers really hard for disclosure, you know, just to make sure that there's nothing that's going to come up, you know, during the deal, you know, during due diligence, or even, you know, right up until the closing date that could blow the deal. Now, can't think of everything, but sometimes we have situations like that where, you know, those two extra trucks blew up a deal. They were two extra trucks he didn't need. Evidently, he said he bought them because he got a great deal on them, and he was going to repurpose them after the sale. But he probably should have disclosed that to the seller, that he has four trucks. He's keeping two of them, and he's going to start a different type of business, moving a different type of material, you know, and not competing.
Yeah, it's tough in those scenarios, right? Because if whether it was intentional or unintentional, leaving that out then says what else is not accurate or truthful, which that's tough, right? Because then how can you trust them at all? And who knows what's going to happen? And what's accurate? That makes it tough.
Yeah, and I tell my team, you get one number wrong on the financial recast, you get one number wrong, it opens the door to question every single number, every single one. I mean, you're eroding trust on the buy side by doing that. When you erode trust, it's hard to get it back.
It's always hard to get it back.
It happens to everybody, even the best. I mean, because you'll find out somebody didn't tell you something.
Yeah.
You can ask a question.
Gregory Kofsky, who's been on the show a couple times, he's the guy that got me to where we are for focusing on business brokers. And he says it all the time, like it takes a lifetime to build up trust and reputation, and it just takes an instant to lose it all, right? Absolutely. It doesn't take anything to lose that, everything that you've built. And in these transactions, like, again, if there's something a seller or a buyer starts asking about and poking holes in things, and you don't have the answers or the explanation, then it's going to be difficult, I can imagine, on your side, right, in that conversation.
I mean, there's plenty of times when they've had questions I couldn't answer it. I don't make something up. I'll just tell, hey, let me get with the seller. I'm sure there's a good explanation for it, you know, and 99% of the time there is.
Yeah.
You know, I might say, oh, it could be this, it could be that, but I don't know without asking. So let me ask.
Yeah, ask. So, all right, well, let's shift gears. I appreciate you sharing that about the deal that got away. I know that one, you know, every time I've chatted with you, you're like, oh, don't worry, I got one for you. That one left enough of a mark. Especially considering how many deals that you have done, which means how many deals didn't finish or get done, or maybe even move past initial stages, right? And for that one to just keep standing out, it's always fascinating, you know, what kind of leaves a mark. So let's shift gears. Let's do a few of the after show. This is the official after show questions. Yeah. So you've been at this for a while, right? So what'd you say, 17, 18 years in Florida?
17, 18 years, yeah.
On your own for like 13, because I think it was 2013 when you started this with yours,
right.
Is if we look at 5 years from now, which is now 2031, which is crazy, Eric, to think in 5 years it'll be 2031. What do you see that it will take for business brokers to be successful in 5 years from now?
I mean, that's like the million-dollar question, right? you know, everybody says AI, AI, AI.
Okay.
I think you need to use it, but I don't. You know, like I said earlier, it's a personal relationship business. AI can help you, you know, find people to relate to, but it can't relate, right?
Yeah.
AI can, you know, maybe speed the process of gathering and organizing information.
Yeah.
But it can't verify it necessarily, because there's a lot of stuff on the internet. And I think we are all smart enough to know that everything on the internet isn't true.
What? So. Wait, what? When did this happen?
Yeah. I'm finding out there's less and less truth on the internet every day. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of the information that we gather, you know, the seller's like, where'd you get that? It's like, well, AI pulled it. And they're like, well, that's not even close to being accurate. Yeah, because I'll ask AI, you know, simple questions like, you know, who are the key competitors of this business? And it'll list them out, and they'll go, that's not even remotely a competitor. You know? And they're like, well, how come it didn't find this one? And it's like, that's a great, they're like two blocks away.
Yeah. Trust but verify with the AI and the technology, any research being done for you, any tool like that, you've got to. But you're saying the key thing is 5 years from now, probably as it is right now as well, is relationships.
Yeah. I think it's still going to be critical. You know, relationships gets the process started. You know, knowledge, personal knowledge does it, because you're not going to get AI to do, you know, your financial recast. You're not going to get it to, you know, get all the nuances of the business from the seller. You know, but you can use it. And the seller, I don't think a seller is going to want you to, you know, send them an AI bot with questions that they can answer, where the AI bot asks them the questions. They're going to want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Because you are the person representing the business.
Yeah.
Right.
It's tough, because the lure of all the automations and the things that you can do with technology, with, you know, people call it AI, but it's not, like, you know, the automation tools and things that you can do. You know, it seems like, hey, that'd be attractive. I'll just have the seller use this AI bot and just go through their process. But again, this is, I think the biggest thing is technology is great and should take care of everything, where all that is left is the human element, right? Like, what you can do as a human is relate to and help another human. And then that should be what's left. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just so important in this business.
Yeah. Makes sense. All right. Next question. So when you look at last year, so in this case here, 2025, let's also include the first half of this year because we're already okay. In July when we're recording this, is what's the biggest lesson, let's say in the last year, year and a half on your end that you've learned?
The biggest lesson I've learned. That's a really tough question. I don't want to sound like I've learned everything because I haven't. Probably the biggest lesson that I've learned is time, you know, is ticking and can't be replaced. So use it incredibly wisely. I have said no to a lot more people lately than I've ever said no to.
Interesting.
I'm still trying to figure, you know, certain things out and trying to figure out how I can better use technology. You know, and a lot of times people would say this is, you know, the greatest thing since, you know, sliced bread. You got to pay for it, and I would pay for it. And I've seen either my time being wasted or other people's time being wasted through that technology, and I have zero tolerance for it anymore.
Yeah, I think that's always valuable, and I think it's going back to the technology. I think what I hear you saying is both the technology and the tools wasting time, and the time is valuable, but also the being specific and more particular with the deals. Like going back to what we talked about in the first part of the episode, is like how much goes into each transaction. So if you're gonna put your energy and time into that, and you can't get those things back, you want to have the highest likelihood of success for you and for them.
If you're a super small business, $100,000, very small commission.
Yeah.
For me, but very small commission. And your books are a mess. Am I going to spend the time to help you get your books cleaned up? I'm not. I'm just going to tell you, you need to go get your books cleaned up, you know, find, you know, a local bookkeeper or somebody, you know, a CPA or something of that nature, and get them cleaned up, and come, you can come back to me when you're ready. If it's, you know, a $5 million deal and their books are a mess, you know, we're going to sit down and have a little consult, and I'm going to, you know, help them engage the right person, you know, to get fixed.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, time is money, you know, you gotta look at the value equation, you know, and where you spend it, you know, and spend it wisely, because
makes sense. Like you said, you're not going to get it back. Once it's spent, it's gone. You know, so, and then like final question for you. So again, we're in July. So technically half of 2026 is gone, which is also wild to think about. What are you excited most for the rest of this year of 2026?
It couldn't be any more exciting. I've got so many deals, you know, in escrow or about to go into escrow. It's crazy. First half of the year, I think with, you know, 2026 with the war in the Middle East, or conflict in the Middle East. I don't really even want to call it a war, because there's, you know, war to me is like there's tanks on the ground, boots on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, hand-to-hand combat and stuff. And there's none of that. It's just, you know, it's conflict, right?
Yeah.
You know, the gas prices, you know, going up a bit, you know, they're starting to come back down. So I would say about the beginning of June, consumer confidence or buyer confidence in the market came back. And with that, came a flood of offers on businesses I had for sale, because I had, you know, quite a few really good ones. And I have a lot of due diligence sessions, lease renegotiations, and closings to attend, knock on wood, for the rest of 2026. So
that's great.
Business is really, really picked up for me.
Nice.
Really picked up. And I've got some really good listings coming too. You know, I'm getting calls, you know, let's see, $9 million annual revenue landscaping company.
Great.
Another dental practice, good sized dental practice. So those type of deals, you know, I'm starting to work on now. So, the pipeline's looking strong going forward too.
That's always great, especially after a slower period where there's nothing you can do about it, you know, as far as like the economic factors that slow everyone down. That's great. I'm super excited for you for this, the second half of the year. Should be fun. I'm excited to get the updates from you as well as that happens. And for people tuning in, I mentioned everything in the first episode, but if they want to reach out to you, if they want to learn more, if they want to just connect with you, if they want to pick your brain, they want to chat, they can go to edisonba.com. They can also find you on LinkedIn, Eric J. Gall. Your email will be in the show notes. Definitely anyone tuning in, you want to learn more, maybe you have a business for sale, you want some help on that, maybe you're a broker, some questions. I know Eric's always been great whenever I've reached out to him and, you know, asked him for stuff. But Eric, thank you for coming back for part two, another hour session, just jamming on stuff. You know, I think it'd be fun for us to do a recap probably next year. Let's talk about like how it went and with your team and all of those factors. Like, I think that'll be fun closing the loop. But no matter what, Eric, I appreciate you being here, sharing so much for a second round. So thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you, Jason.
And for everyone tuning in, you know, appreciate your support. Make sure to like, subscribe, share wherever you see this. Again, I've mentioned it so many times every episode. Awareness, education, anything that we can do to get this out there to help business owners make smart choices, even understand this is an option, find a good broker, understand the process, what it takes to be prepared, and link up with, you know, professionals like Eric. That's why we do what we do. So until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.